On one day, one day, Thursday, October 10th, 3,000 plus students, educators, and volunteers will visit some 65 sites along the Hudson from New York Harbor to the mouth of the Mohawk. It is being called a day in the life of the Hudson River. We'll also discuss their annual Science on the River event, which is coming up next month as well. Our two buddies from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Estuary Program are here to tell us this morning about how these programs help people get a feel for the diversity and dynamic nature of the Hudson River and the system that is the river. Fran Dunwell is the Hudson River Estuary Coordinator. Chris Bowser is the Hudson River Science Educator. Chris and Fran, welcome back to the program. It's always a delight to have you both here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe, and all your radio listeners.
Well, it is it's very good to have you here. I remember last year you were here for this event, and it was the 10th anniversary, this day on the Hudson, 10th anniversary of day on the Hudson. So that would make this the 11th.
That is correct.
And that's very exciting.
Yep, 11 years of this great event, which is a terrific way to introduce thousands of students to the Hudson River. It's a great way to get students involved in looking at the river from a scientific perspective, but also looking at the river as a place they can enjoy and a place that they can then tell their parents about and bring whole families down to the river. We like to think of this event as the first stepping stone to a lifetime of being involved in the Hudson Valley.
Is October the best time to do it?
Yeah, we like October because the weather is generally okay. There's just so much to do at the end of the school year in April or May that teachers can respond more favorably to that time. And it's a time when the river is full of fish, many juvenile fish that were born earlier that year. So our seining and fishing programs are always very, very productive in the fall.
So you get to see stuff.
You can see stuff. And we actually brought a few things with us.
Do you want to see those now?
Absolutely. So the first thing I want to show you is, many people think of, the Hudson River and it's full of fish.
Should I put away my laptop?
Oh, that's probably a great idea.
Might get wet.
So I have in a little container, I have a little fish that's about 5 inches long.
And
it looks like a weird cross between, you can hold that, Joe. It looks like a weird cross between an eel and a catfish. It's long and snake-like. Like an eel.
Oh, yeah, but it has the little cat thingies.
But it has little barbels all around its mouth.
I meant barbels.
Of course you did. Little whiskers. That is a weatherfish or pond loach. And previous...
Pond loach. Yeah. L-O-A-C-H?
L-O-A-C-H.
Okay.
And it's a relative newcomer to the Hudson River system.
It has sort of a pink color.
Mm-hmm. Sort of pinkish brown, yeah.
Pinkish brown. And it's kind of a cute little fellow.
Sure, it's cute. The issue with it is that we've only found it in a few tidal areas of the Hudson River.
Oh, is this an invasive species?
This is definitely a non-native species and potentially invasive because in one of the creeks we studied, we found that there were lots and lots of pond loaches and very few of anything else. So the early worry is that maybe this might be a competitor in some of our Hudson River tributaries, and we're just starting to find them now.
So how do we manage this little guy?
It's a really good question. Right now, there's sort of two approaches. One is a wait and see approach and just keep an eye on things.
Yeah.
The other thing is to make sure that we do really good studies of all of our tributaries and take a look at the water quality, take a look at what watershed inputs are doing to those tributaries, and take a look at the other fish species that are in there. The more we know for a baseline of how things are, the better prepared we are to take care of all sorts of management issues now and in the future.
So how hard was it for you to find this guy?
Oh, it was very easy. We were doing a survey for eels, which is the other highlight species for the morning, and they started popping up everywhere.
It's eel day?
It's eel day, Joe.
It's your lucky day.
Oh, I didn't even send you a card.
It's eel day, Joe. Every day is eel day in my life.
Okay.
So we were doing other surveys, and surprise to us, they just started popping up. And luckily, we had super scientist Dr. Bob Schmidt along with us, and he had done work on this before, and he knew exactly what we were looking at.
Now, is this so? Where is this in its development? Because it's about 5 or 6 inches long.
Yeah, that's an adult.
That's an adult. So this is about as big as this will get.
They get to be about the size of a hot dog.
Okay.
They look and hot dog fish.
Yeah, very much so.
With
so
whiskers.
Now, with whiskers, barbels. And at what point, help me. You use very scientific language, which I appreciate, but I just want to make sure that I understand. So what do they do that's bad? They feed on things that other things should be feeding on.
Exactly. We really don't know what they do that's bad. They may not do much that's quote-unquote bad, but the worry is what we have to pay attention to is to make sure that if these do become widespread, what effects do they have on our other native species that are important to us and important to the ecosystem?
And if we did some sort of test, would we know where it came from, where we got it from?
We're pretty sure they're native to Southeast Asia, and they're often popular in the aquarium trade, so it's very likely that this was in somebody's fish tank or this fish's great-great-grandmother, and somebody said, I'm done with this fish. I think I'll just let it go in the Wallkill River or something like that.
And there it goes.
And there it goes, and that's, you know, as we become more of a global community, one of the things we have to be aware of is as distances shrink, it's easier and easier for us as people to take species from one area of the world to another.
I'm going to ask a question, and I mean it as a thoughtful question.
Okay.
So just I say that because it may come off as I'm being silly, but I'm not. So you go out and you feed the birds, right? And you go out and you put the bird feeder out, and you fill it with seed, and you're very good at that. And then a squirrel shows up, and all hell breaks loose. Yeah, oh my God, the squirrels are here. I want to feed the cute birds. I don't want to feed the squirrels. And they rip up the feeders. And then you go out and you do horrible things to the squirrels. Some people do. Not all people. So what makes the creature that is being compromised perhaps by this creature better than this creature? Like how do we put this in? Because it seems to me then we are creating somewhat of a an ecological caste system.
We are, and you know you couldn't begin to return the Hudson River and the Hudson Valley to what it was in colonial times or pre-colonial times or even when Native Americans were here. People have always been fooling around with the environment, basically to make it more favorable for humans. So Native Americans were planting trees that would provide nuts that would enhance the habitat for deer so they could hunt more deer. They were, you know, managing forests to create shrubland for berry picking. A lot of the trees and species we have here were either introduced on purpose because they taste good or they, you know, they help people survive, or in some cases because of human fancy. You know, there was somebody that had the idea that they would have every bird that's listed in Shakespeare's sonnets exist here. And
right.
So, you know, that's how the starling came to America.
yeah.
The other thing to keep in mind
I understand.
Is one of the golden rules of biology. Biodiversity, or let me rephrase that, diversity equals resilience. We have that in society and we have that in ecology as well. So if you can maintain a healthy diversity of fish species, of habitats, of plants and animals, you're going to have a system that is more resilient to change, whether that's climate change or any other kind of impacts.
So as long as that's sustainable, as long as that you have enough to go around for all the fish in the sea, as it were, then it's okay. But we are also screwing around with what they're living off of,
right.
which
when you bring in a new non-native species shows up, that may not have a lot of predators, that may not have the checks and balances of diseases and food sources that other species do. If that becomes dominant and starts to outcompete many, many other species, you end up going from a very diverse system to a sort of a monoculture system, and that's not good for resilience.
Right.
So that's what we
what
have
you
to keep
to avoid.
An eye on.
Yeah. Okay. The other program, because we mentioned the day on the life
day in the life of the
Hudson River,
which is October 10th.
And then you also have your Science on the River event.
Yes. So the day in the life of the Hudson River, that's a really good program for students and teachers. And if there's teachers out there listening and they want to get in touch with me about that, please, by all means, just do an internet search. For the members of the general public that really want to get down to the river or families, we've got a free program at the Hudson River Research Reserve in Statsburg at the Norrie Point Environmental Center. That's going to be on Saturday, October 5th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. We're going to have a whole lot of scientific researchers on hand talking about their work, but doing it in a really hands-on, family-friendly way. We can go canoeing. You can go fishing with nets or rods. You can meet a lot of great people who are involved in the river, and it's very much set up for families to come down and just enjoy the Hudson River and all of the great things about it in below and above the waters. And again, that's going to be Saturday, October 5th, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Norrie Point Environmental Center in Stattsburg.
And we'll give people more information about that at the end of the segment as well for both events, the Day in the Life of the Hudson and the Science on the River event. Okay, so bring on the eel.
Okay, so one of the bits of research that'll be highlighted in the Science in the River event is some new research that we're doing on American eels, which is a native species to the Hudson River. We've had them here a long time. And Joe, I've been on your show a couple times with the tiny baby glass eels. These
Yes.
are the tiny little 2-inch eels that show up in the spring, and they're adorable. They've swam 1,000 miles from the Sargasso Sea to get here.
Yep.
Now, because of some great work by the Research Reserve and the Estuary Program, we're starting to build a pretty good knowledge of where those little baby eels are coming in.
Yeah.
But what we don't know are how many of the grown-up eels, the mature eels, are leaving the Hudson River Estuary to go back to spawn. And that's a really important thing to know. So what we've started to do is we've started to look at bigger eels. Now, I've got actually a relatively small eel in a tank
Hello,
right here
sailor.
Showing Joe.
What is that?
That is a foot and a half long American eel. And if you look closely at it, it actually has slightly bigger eyes than most eels do. And what
Well,
that,
certainly bigger than those other things you brought in.
Sure. What those big eyes tell me is that this is
an
American eel.
Oh, what big eyes you have.
This is an eel that is thinking about heading back out to the sea to spawn. Maybe not this year, but maybe or maybe soon.
No, hold on. How can you tell that in the eyes?
Well,
how can you look into this eel's eyes and know that it's ready to spawn?
When an eel becomes what we call a silver eel, ready to spawn,
okay,
its eyes get bigger, its fins get bigger.
Well,
it gets this silver cast to its body. You know, there's a lot of romance in science,
and there's also the telepathic communication that Chris has with eels.
That's
yes,
true.
Okay, I figured that.
But the other thing we know,
what big eyes you have. Oh, you want to have sex? Yes.
The other way we know is that in my hand right now, I'm holding a tiny, tiny little pit tag. It's just a little device the size and shape of a piece of long grain rice. And what
okay.
that is basically,
I can confirm that.
It's basically a little barcode, a passive barcode that
now,
we can
what put, is that made out of?
It's made out of metal and glass and,
okay.
and high tensile plastic. And what we do is we can insert that inside the eel and
yeah.
it doesn't hurt the eel. It just stays in that fish for years. It doesn't have a battery and it's tiny. So as we catch these animals, we can scan them to see if we've caught them before, what their measurements were the first time we caught them, and how they've changed over time. And that helps give us clues as to when eels are silvering or getting ready to go back out to sea. So this is a really interesting research project where we're trying to build a model to predict how many eels are in a particular system that might be ready
but
to make
you,
more eels.
So you would be able to tell with or without this little chip that this eel is horny.
Well, I have my guesses, and the chip just helps give me some confirmation.
Okay, all right, I gotcha. That's fascinating. Now, how many of these things do you plant in? And
well, we've tagged almost 200 this summer as
okay.
part of a research project that we're doing with the Hudson River Foundation.
It's a little bit like the microchip that people put in their pets.
It's very much like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think those are that's fascinating. That's
yeah.
really cool. And are there other species that you do those with?
Well, sure. The Department of Environmental Conservation does a lot of fisheries work in the Hudson River and all throughout New York State, and uses a lot of interesting technology to do that. This is, I particularly work with eels, but within the Hudson River Estuary Program, we
put that on your business card, my friend.
It's there.
Yeah.
We work with giant 8 and 10 foot sturgeon. We work with striped bass. We work with thousands of herring that are coming up the river.
Yes.
We're really trying to take a good comprehensive view of all the different species that live in the Hudson Valley so that, again, we can preserve that diversity so that we can preserve a resilient ecosystem for all of us to enjoy.
By the way, if you're on your computer or near a computer and you want to see the American eel, you can go to wamc.org, and catch the stream. And I believe it's up there, and you can see
see this little creature. This would be in the Hudson River. What other bodies of water would this be in?
Well, the American eel is born in the Sargasso Sea, which is basically the Bermuda Triangle. And not a lot is known about how they reproduce. It's surmised. You know, people think that's where they are born, but they don't really know a lot. But the American eel would be in estuaries all up and down the Atlantic coast. They also migrate to estuaries in Europe. So, you know, these are abundant. They're everywhere. Well, the Hudson and its tributaries is where we really see these eels finding their habitat where they can grow to adulthood and then mature and go back to sea. It's really a fascinating life cycle. Mm. And it's the opposite of the usual life cycle on the Hudson. We, in the estuary, we provide habitat for many species to reproduce. So you have your shad, your striped bass, your herring, all come into the Hudson during the springtime to spawn. They can't reproduce. They can't complete their life cycle without having an estuary like the Hudson. The eel is the opposite. It is actually born in the ocean and comes into the Hudson to mature. But the estuary is really crucial habitat for the entire Atlantic coast. And we're really, through the estuary program, trying to establish the scientific understanding that will help us manage these. We are protecting the habitats and restoring habitats of the Hudson so that more of these species can grow and thrive. And we're working on improving water quality, not just for the creatures that live in the Hudson, but so people can enjoy it. We have a lot of people that go kayaking and swimming in the Hudson, and we're working hard to improve water quality as well.
If this particular creature were to wear a hat, would it be black or white?
White.
White all the way.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a good guy.
Without a doubt.
It's not going to hurt us in any way.
It is not an electric eel.
It is. Is this, how big is it, about as big as it gets?
Oh, no. A large female American eel might get to be 3 or 4 feet long.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a little frightening. I mean, this is what you said, a foot and a half?
Yeah. The one that I've got to show you is about a foot and a half. So that's still a junior.
Yeah. Okay. And it's, so is that what I get to look forward to next year?
Sure. I'm trying hard.
We're trying our best to bring you eels in all their life stages.
Well,
so you've seen the glass eels, and now you're looking at probably a silver eel.
Certainly worth something to keep in mind during contract negotiation. What I find fascinating is sort of the prehistoric nature of the creature. Every once in a while, he'll kind of will bring up, the head will come up right out of the water. And there's kind of a little prehistoric quality to it.
Yeah. Freshwater eels like this have probably been around for 150 million years or more. And we have a great lesson to learn from these animals, because it tells us that we can get through big changes in the environment. You know, climate change is not a disaster that we need to panic about. That just like the eels are resilient through time, we can be resilient as well. We can learn a lot from these things about getting through hardship and overcoming.
So there are the eyes, the mouth, and then right under it, there's sort of there's a a pulsing.
Those are the fish's gills.
Those are the gills.
Yeah, this is not a snake. So like other fish, it breathes water by passing it over its gills.
Now, it has two little guys there. Are those the gills?
Those are fins, pectoral
fins.
Those are
fins, yeah. And then the gills are prior to that, because you don't see an opening, I guess, is what I'm...
Well, it's taking water in through its mouth, and it's blowing it out through the gills.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's very, very cool. Like,
and eels are also very handy because they can breathe through their skin. So as long as they stay wet, they'll actually breathe through their skin, which is why you can find them in little streams and farm ponds and backyard ponds. So
they found them in the Ashokan Reservoir, which is quite far from the Hudson.
And as we always want to note, is always the case when you come in and bring creatures, that by the end of the day, these will be back where they belong, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
These fish will be released back into the Falkill
Creek. They are brought to us for an educational purpose, and then they will be left to their own devices later in the day. So they're just on a little day trip.
Without a doubt.
You can find out more information, all kinds of cool stuff going on. Thursday, October 10th is a day in the life of the Hudson River. That is very exciting. Also, don't forget Science on the River event at Norrie Point Environmental
Center on Saturday, October 5th from 1 to 4. So two great events. The Science in the River event is a free public event, and it's terrific. You can take part in it. And again, the Day in the Life of the Hudson River takes place on October 10th. That is a Thursday. If you want to find out more information, your email, your website is?
You can just do an internet search for the Hudson River Estuary Program.
Yes.
I encourage everybody to sign up for the Hudson River Almanac, which is a great way to keep in touch with us. And if you find some weird fish, please let me know.
Fran Dunwell is the Hudson River Estuary Coordinator. Yes, please do, because then Chris will bring them in and show them to us. Chris Bowser is the Hudson River Science Educator. I love when you two are on. Fran Dunwell, Chris Bowser, thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.